This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody fray.
Hello, everyone. This is Bob Main, and you're listening to the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 100. Unbelievable, folks. Thanks so much. Finally, it is here. Episode 100. It's taken me a little bit over a year to do that, and I just can't believe it. I can't believe I've pushed this record button 100 times to talk about guns and firearms and concealed carry and so forth, and you folks keep on listening. And I got to tell you, that's the only reason why I've even been able to get to this point is because you people keep listening. So thanks again. And you know what? If you're tuning in for the first time to episode 100, or if you're relatively new, and all of a sudden you look at this and go, wow, what does this guy talk about? What's he talked about 100 times? This is a practical show. You'll notice I don't get real technical. Unless I've got somebody on here interviewing with me that's technical, typically I don't get into a whole lot of technicalities. And what I mean by that is I'm not a gunsmith. I'm not ex-military, I'm not ex-law enforcement, I'm not a firearms trainer and stuff like that, I'm just an everyday guy. I, folks, am just a salesperson, that's all I do, and I've been doing it now for over 26 years. I just run around Texas and Oklahoma trying to sell electronics products in the security business. So that's pretty much all I do, folks, but I love to conceal carry, I love to shoot. Matter of fact, it's Saturday morning, December 11th, as I dictate this right now. You're going to hear this a few days out into the future from now, but I am headed out to go exercise my Second Amendment rights. I'm going to a shooting match, going to go have quite a bit of fun this morning. So as I'm in my car, I just want to talk to you and say, I don't know if you know this or not, but I almost didn't do this podcast. Shortly after I started doing this, I was actually launching two podcasts. I was launching this one and today's survival show. Actually, I started doing today's survival show first. Now, I was getting kind of frustrated because it's not easy to launch a podcast, folks. For some of you who are listening to this who have done it, if you are a podcaster, I think you know what I'm talking about. And I was launching two of them at a time. And I didn't think that anybody was listening. I knew I had a few listeners, but after about a month and a half, I just wasn't quite sure if it was something that I should keep on doing. So I went several weeks without putting out a show. And a listener sent me a comment asking me why hadn't I put out any more shows in the last few weeks. He said he was enjoying them and he was disappointed that I hadn't put out another show. And I went, oh, wow, I can't believe it. There's somebody disappointed that I haven't put out a show. Oh, man. Maybe I should keep doing this. And really, folks, you know how things sometimes just come down to one small thing that makes something happen or makes you continue to do it? That was it. I was going to quit doing the Handgun World Show about a month and a half after I started it. I just figured, yeah, you know, it's not worth my time. I'll just concentrate on just doing one podcast and that's it. Until, in fact, you can read it. You can go back. I think it's right around episode 4 or 5. You have to go to handgunworld.com, and you have to look at the comments. But he was wanting to know when I was going to put out another show again. And that was it. So, you know, it's all because of that, folks, and it's because of you. So I wanted to make this show about you primarily. Now, I've got some comments that you, the listener, have sent to me about my show. But really, this is about you, the listener. And that's pretty much the focus that I want. I do have a main topic, and I'll announce that and introduce that when I get to it. But let's get started here with some listener feedback as I head out to this shoot. Oh, by the way, folks, I'm going to shoot personal protection match again. Last month I did a podcast called Personal Protection Match, and I talked about it. It's at Dallas Pistol Club. For those of you who are relatively new to the show, I live in Dallas-Fort Worth. I'm a Yankee by birth, but I now live in the great state of Texas. So I am heading out to go do the December personal protection match. Again, what I really love about this, and I've said it many times, this is a match that where I get to load all my magazines to full capacity. I'm shooting my Glock 19 again today because I've committed for a year that I'm going to shoot my Glock 19, thanks to Steve Zofi. So I get to load my magazines up with 15 rounds in the mag, one in the pipe. So I get to start each match with 16, each stage with 16 rounds. There's probably going to be, as usual, there's going to be one stage that is only going to make us allow us to have six rounds in it, probably. They'll make us download to six. Usually they do that at least once. But for the most part, the reason I like shooting this match is because we can bring our guns as we carry them. I mean, think about it. If you have a high capacity, or somebody said, no, Bob, it's not high capacity. A Glock is not high capacity. It's normal capacity. So, yeah, he's right. So if you have a normal capacity firearm like mine, a normal capacity 15 rounds in the mag, one in the chamber, don't you carry it that way? I do. I carry mine stuffed to the hilt. So what I like about this match is I get to bring my gun as I carry it, and I get to shoot it as I carry it. And that's, again, I've said many times, folks, going to gaming matches like this, it's not professional fighting combat handgun training. I understand that, and I agree with that. But it sure does give you the ability to practice shooting and firearms handling in such a way that you just simply cannot go down to any square range that's open to the public during the public hours and practice this kind of stuff. And, you know, I've said it many times and I'll say it again. Isn't this why we carry? Don't we? See, here's my philosophy. Agree with it or not. I believe we carry a gun. I mean, some people feel that shooting is a sport. It is. It is a sport. I like the sport of shooting, but I don't take the sport side of it very seriously. I do it because I want to be prepared. I want to be prepared because if, God forbid, that day comes where I have to use this weapon, I want to be proficient with it. And so that's why I do it. And so now a couple times a month, that's why either I'm going to a training class somewhere or I'm going to some kind of a shooting competition match because it just helps improve my skills. And a little bit later in segment number two, I've got some good information about why you should game it as a shooter, about why you should get involved in these games. Somebody else wrote it, not me. Okay, but let's get into some listener feedback. First thing I want to cover is from Daryl. Daryl said he wrote to me, first of all, he starts the first few sentences talking about how much he likes my show, and thank you, Daryl, I appreciate that. He said, I am a liberal. I guess you can say since I have liberal views, but I also support gun rights. And that's why I'm sad that the liberal gun cast is no longer being updated. I love your show, and I'll continue to listen every week. Too many people associate Democrats and liberals with not supporting gun rights, where that simply just is not true. People have different views on different subjects, and as you can probably agree, Bob, my needs probably differ from yours, and that is how I choose to vote and how I support gun rights. I'm also one of the people that you talk about that have a concealed carry permit but rarely carry. But it's because, number one, I work on an Air Force base in Oklahoma City and I cannot carry on base. And number two, I work graveyard, so most of the time I'm at home. Your topic a few shows ago about people who do not post in forums or even look at forums also describes me, and it's because of some of the same reasons that you explain. Well, again, I just wanted to say, Bob, keep up the good work. I just wanted to write to you and let you know that I agree with some of your comments, and I wanted to give you a tad information about me. Daryl. Well, hey, Daryl, first of all, thanks. You know what? Let me just say something to Daryl. I want to say something to all of you who are listening to this show that are political in nature. You know, when I set out to do this show, I made it a very clear point not to get politics involved in my show very much. If you've been listening to me long enough, you know what my politics are. That probably comes out every once in a while. But I'm not going to use this podcast as a way to cut down people that think a certain way politically. Because Daryl's right. There are liberals who support gun rights. Now, I will have to say I do have a problem with the liberal politicians that support gun rights, but yet they support a lot of other things that eventually take away a lot of other rights. I got a problem with that, but on the issues of guns, this show transcends political beliefs. Okay, all political opinions are welcome on the Handgun World Show. So, Daryl, thanks. And I've had liberals on here interviewing with me before. And I really appreciate it when you are a Democrat politically, or if you are a liberal politically, or however you want to describe yourself, but you support gun rights, I would love to hear from you. So thank you, Daryl. I appreciate that. And I hope you continue to listen to this show and get a lot out of it. Now, there's another email I want to share with you from Jay. Jay writes to me, and he says, "Personally, I carry every day at work. I know most people don't have such a luxury. I wear dress slacks with a button-down shirt and a tie, so I thought I would be quite limited on how and what I can carry. For the longest time, I pocket carried a Kel-Tec. But," he says, "a smart carry holster that I got for Christmas last year changed that. Now I routinely carry a Glock 23 with a spare magazine, and I feel almost undergunned if I only have the little Kel-Tec." Hey, Jay, thanks for sending that in. There's more to his email, but that was the primary subject that I wanted to cover with you about his email. Now, let me say something about that. Remember the show that I did called Carry a Big Gun? You know, yes, you would be surprised, folks, and Jay's email proves that here. I think you'd be real surprised how big of a gun you really can carry with some effort and with some commitment. My car P380 has been staying home a lot. And my Glock 19 has been coming with me a lot. And I'm really not wanting to go any smaller than my car PM9. I just don't really see the need for it much anymore. I mean, just, you know, nobody's looking, folks. And if you're concealing it correctly. See, here's the great thing about concealed carry. You know, people who actually carry a gun every day, we're still by far in the minority, aren't we? I mean, I wish that were not the case, but it's true. We are still, by far, in the minority. And so, the general public out there is just not looking for a gun. They're just not looking for people carrying guns. I know, those of you who listen to this show that carry all the time, you're probably like me. You're always examining people, right, with your eyes. You're always giving them a visual examination to try to find out, let's see, what's this guy carrying? Oh, gee, I wonder, I can make out a grip a little bit there. His grip's printing a little bit, but I can't figure out what that is. Not quite sure if he's carrying it or not. He might be, though. Right? You ever do that? You ever see about, you know, four people in the grocery store or five people in the grocery store and try to figure out who and if any of them are carrying? I've done that. Come on, be honest. If you've done that, be honest with yourself. But the general public, most people are not. And with so much crap that we carry on our belts these days, I mean, I have to carry two cell phones now, two big phones. I carry an iPhone and I carry another Windows mobile phone, Windows smartphone, excuse me, that my company issues me now. So, you know, carrying two large cell phones on me, and one of them I keep on my belt, you can't tell when I have my Glock 19 in my MTAC holster or when I have it in my Dale Fricke Archangel holster. You can't tell. Seriously, folks, if my shirt is untucked, you're not going to know whether that is my large cell phone or whether that is a gun there. You have no clue. And if it's properly concealed, people are not going to. So, Jay, I'm glad you wrote in and talked about this because, you know, I hope this is some kind of a motivator for some of you. And you can, you know, you heard me describe how he dresses. He dresses a lot like I do when I'm in business. So, folks, it is possible to carry a decent-sized gun. Okay, the next bit of feedback. I'm getting pretty close, by the way, to the range, folks, so I'm going to read you one more bit of feedback, and then I'm going to go shoot the match, and I'll give you some thoughts about the match, maybe an interview with somebody, and then I got some more information on the big on the main topic here for episode number 100. But Charlie writes in to me, and Charlie says, "Hey, Bob, I know that you've covered this before, but I want to mention it again. I live in Michigan and went deer hunting this weekend. It was cold. Along with my shotgun, I always take my Glock 17. You always hope that there's going to be a chance that you get to take the shot with the Glock 17. Well, Sunday morning it happened. I was trying to stay warm when 10 yards in front of me, a deer walks out. First of all, it was too close to get the shotgun into play. And secondly, it was my chance to finally take that shot. I unholstered the Glock 17, take aim, and then realize that the gloves I'm wearing will fit into the trigger guard on the shotgun, but not fit into the trigger guard on the Glock. Crap! After the deer walks off into the woods, and I mentally beat myself up. I think, what if I was going back to my car and someone wanted to take my gun or my car? I could not put my pistol into play. I'm glad that it happened with a deer and not in a critical situation. So like you say, practice with what you have and with how you dress. I picked up a new pair of gloves last night. A loyal listener, Charlie. Hey, Charlie, thanks. You know, cool story. I'm sorry that that happened, first of all. I'm sorry that that you weren't able to drop that deer. Couldn't get your Glock 17 into action either because your gloves wouldn't fit in the trigger guard. Now, you know what? They must be some pretty good-sized gloves because, I mean, the trigger guard on a Glock is pretty large. But I suppose it can happen depending on what you're wearing. And so, yeah, you know, that's one of the big reasons why I'm a big fan of practicing how I dress. I like to practice with what I wear every day or almost every day and you know, I would say that, you know, Charlie's example is good. If you're going to go hunting and you're going to take a pistol with you and you're going hunting, you need to practice deploying your pistol if you're hunting as well. You need to make sure that what you're wearing and where you are and your ability to get your handgun into the hunting experience as well, you need to practice that. Because think about it. How many hunters go out there, they do take a handgun with them as backup, but they're not practicing with that either. And they're not practicing getting that handgun into action as well. So thanks, Charlie. Charlie, appreciate that. With that said, folks, guess what? I am here at the range. I got a lot more to cover on episode 100. I might sandwich a little bit of feedback about the match into this. I'm not sure, but the main topic is going to be coming up in the next segment. I do have some more listener feedback. I got a lot of it, folks. And again, this is about you. It's not about me. I got a lot more listener feedback here to cover. So I'll weave that into the next segment. So for now, let me go shoot. Let me go practice my Second Amendment rights and get better here at the personal protection match. Stay tuned. Here's a little musical break and a advertisement for the Gun Rights Radio Network and the forums and everything, and I'll be right back.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and other listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit GunRightsRadio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. GunRightsRadio.com.
The president and other politicians are protected by men carrying rifles and pistols with high-capacity magazines, but they're outlawing them for you and me. Do they think their lives are more important than ours?
Gun control is not about stopping crime. It's about disarming America.
All right, folks. For you, that was a short break. For me, it was about 2.5 hours. It was a good match. I got to tell you, I love this personal protection match. I shot great today. I got to brag a little bit. I did very well. It was 5 stages. And I was shooting a perfect match until. And perfect match means I neutralized every single target through 4 stages. On the fifth stage, I failed to engage one target. The last stage, we had 11 targets. We had to score at least 5 points on each target to neutralize. What do I do? I had a perfect match going, no penalties, neutralized everything, shot fairly quickly. What do? I get down to the last stage and I screw it up. Doesn't that suck? Anyway, so I got a failure to neutralize 10-second penalty because I didn't shoot that last target, or shoot one of the targets on the last stage. Oh well. Anyway, it was a lot of fun, and there's my thoughts on the match. I know that was quick, but this show isn't about a shooting match that I just shot. This is supposed to be about listener feedback and then why you should game it. So, a little bit more from listeners. Brett writes to me and he says, hey, Bob, he's got a humorous story for me. He said he just finished listening to episode 95, the yogurt incident, happened not too far from his place. And he said he went down to his basement to do some dry fire practicing, and he decided to listen to another one of my episodes while practicing. Man, that's cool. Hey, Brett, you know, you're listening to me while practicing shooting? I'm flattered. Thank you. So he grabbed his Glock 23, a couple of empty mags, and a few snap caps, and he started to practice. Now, he says the way he was trained is to let the magazine fall to the ground. And then after about 15 to 20 minutes of reload practice, he dropped his mag, reloaded, and went to retrieve his mag from the floor, and the darn thing had disappeared. So in other words, he dropped his mag on the floor, went to retrieve it, and it was gone. Now, at the time of the writing of this email, he said that was a few days ago, and he's still been searching for the damn magazine ever since. He says he moved around furniture, did laundry, still couldn't find it. And, Brett, you know what? Your email never did say whether you found it or not, so let me know. But hang on to your mags when you're practicing, folks. I've actually done that, too. I did that once. I was dry fire practicing, and I practiced my reload, and the magazine actually slid underneath a chair, and I actually couldn't see it, and I was searching for it for a couple of minutes trying to figure it out, and it was kind of wedged itself up against the leg of a chair just perfectly to where I couldn't see it. Never know what happens. But anyway, hey, Brett, you know what? You know the main thing is I'm glad you wrote that to me. I'm glad you're dry fire practicing. That is so important. So thanks for that comment. Okay, now, the next email I want to share with you, this is a really long one, but I'm just going to pick out one small part of it. Duncan, who is British, sent me a note saying that he likes to practice with his EAA Witness 45. Now, that's a gun I've never shot. I've actually seen one, but I've never had a chance to shoot one. But he said, here's the reasons why he likes the EAA Witness in 45 caliber, 45 ACP. Number one, it's a good-looking weapon. Number two, he's a lefty. And he likes the fact that it's a right-handed gun. Of course, I'm not quite sure what he means by that, but he likes the fact that it's a large caliber, of course, 45, yep. He likes the fact that it's a, now he likes that it's a double action, single action trigger, so he can practice with both types of trigger pull technique. Now, you know, there's a point to that. I mean, I guess I never thought of it that way. I like to have a consistent trigger pull. That's just my personal preference. But, you know, a lot of SIGs and Berettas out there and the EAA and so forth that are DAC, SA. And for those of you who are new, double action is the first shot, and then it's single action every shot after that, as long as you're starting from the decocked position. You know, Duncan says he gets to practice different types of trigger presses. Well, you know, I guess that's something I never thought about, so good point. And he said it was cost effective. He says he got his for $370 with one mag. So that's good too. I guess that's a pretty good price. So Duncan, you know, thanks for sending that in. And he lives in LA. So, thanks for sending that in. I appreciate that. And, Duncan, you know, I got to say, that was just a heck of a great, entertaining email. I just, you know, because of time purposes, I had to just pick out one small part of it. But it was an excellent, entertaining email. Thanks for sending that in. Now, this next one comes from George from Chicago. And he says he tries to listen to as many of my podcasts as he can. Thanks very much. Appreciate that, George. He says, Bob, I do nearly everything left-handed, and he'd feel much better drawing a firearm lefty, but usually shoot righty. He said shooting lefty is about 85% as comfortable as shooting right-handed. Is it unheard of to switch hands from the draw to the shoot hand? No, I don't think it's unheard of. It's not something I would do. I think you leave a lot of room for error, but it's probably like anything else. If you can practice, whatever's going to work out for you, whatever's going to shoot better for you, whatever you're going to actually train yourself and embed into your memory to do, I would say go for it. I'm not going to do it, but I do practice shooting left-handed quite a bit, even though I'm a righty. And he wanted to know if I could have a guest on my show who has been in a self-defense situation and needed to resort to their firearm, because he wants to hear about the nuances of that. So, George, guess what? I'm going to work on that. You bet. And if any of you listen to this, if you've been in an experience like that, I know it's probably a tough experience to go through. If you want to share that with us, if you feel comfortable, that's fine. Come on, send me an email, and we'll do a Skype to Skype or a Skype to phone call, and we'll get you on the show. George, thanks for that comment. I like it. Mike sends me an email. He says, I've been meaning to write to you for some time. Tell you how much I enjoy your show. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate that. And he says, competitive shooting is a new interest for him. And he was complimenting me on my show because it's genuine and clearly listeners can feel your enthusiasm about the sport. And he said his wife and he and his wife were impressed with my dedication to the sport. And basically, it was pretty much a thank you email. And Mike, I appreciate that. Thanks. You know, when I get to the main topic, we're going to talk about how it's not just a sport, but it can prepare you for some things that hopefully won't come your way, but it can. And I'll leave that pretty much to the main topic. But Mike, thanks for sending that in. Scott sends me. Yeah, there's a lot of emails here, folks. Scott sends me one, and this is interesting. He said, Bob, I'm a recent subscriber and have been trying to listen to all your shows, and I don't often email the show hosts. But after listening to episode 99, I decided to break from the norm and email you. Well, Scott, I'm flattered. He says he enjoys the fact that I don't come off as an end-all, be-all expert on guns. And the fact is, as most of you know, I make it a point to tell you that I'm not. And he said, show number 99, my most recent one, that was the icing on the cake that made him write to me. He really enjoyed that interview with John Hadaway, and John did do a great job. John, thanks a lot for what you did coming on the show. He said he was thinking along the same lines as me about getting a 380, P-238, and, he was thinking that it's a pretty good backup or a good gun to conceal during the hot summer months. But he said John brought up some very, very good points, and it sounds like maybe Scott might be reconsidering the 380. You know, to me, let me just say this. By the way, Scott, thanks for your comment. I want to comment on what you said. And after doing that interview with John Hadaway, my 380 is going to see less carry time. My car PM9 is going to get a lot of carry time, and of course during the winter months my Glock 19. But I'm giving the 45 some consideration, at least for carry. And I know that John mentioned the PM45 he likes to carry by Car Arms. I'm considering that or a P45. That's something that's kind of in the back of my mind right now because of talking to John. So, hey, anyway, Scott, thanks for sending in this email. Okay, and last but certainly not least, on the comments section, a guy named Dane wrote to me, and he said that he lives in Colorado, but he's going to be in Dallas over Christmas, and says he'd like to shoot with me and check out my Glock with the grip reduction. Dane, yeah, you got it. Let's go shooting. As a matter of fact, we'll pick one of the matches, personal protection match, or we'll go to IDPA, or we'll maybe even find a USPSA match. Email me at bob@handgunworld.com. bob@handgunworld.com. So that pretty much kind of concludes the segments. Folks, this is great. I know you guys were commenting about my show, but really it's about you. And it's about what you guys do, and you continue to listen to this program, and I appreciate that very much. So let's get into the main topic of why you should game it. Okay? The author of what I'm going to talk about is a guy named HB, and he wrote a great article in DefensiveReview.com. And he talks about why you should get into the sport of shooting. He says, real violence is not sporting. It's confusing, often grotesque, and characterized by intense physical effects upon combatants. And in a real fight, the winner is often the individual who employs simple, effective maneuvers in a precise and deadly manner, or at least being able to stop your attacker. But the application of these techniques in a fight can be quite difficult. Countless repetitions have to be performed for a gross motor skill such as a punch to be performed upon a resistant opponent. For a complex motor skill such as marksmanship with a gun, thousands of repetitions are performed before an individual can utilize that technique against any sort of resistance. You know, let me take a sidebar here and just say, folks, you know, it's often been said that repetition is the mother of learning. And isn't that the truth? So therein lies the beauty of competition. Competitive training does not dwell on tactics or mindset, but instead on the constant repetition of key skills. Let me say that again, because I think this is a very big, important part of his article here. The beauty of competition, competitive training, is that it does not dwell on tactics or mindset. And I'm not saying tactics or mindset's not important, folks. I don't think that's the author's intent here. It is important. But instead, it does dwell on the constant repetition of key skills. And it is in this context, that I believe that sporting events can function as a training tool for individuals, especially, and he points out, martial-minded individuals. Now, he goes on to say he understands and he fully acknowledges that sports are not the end-all be-all. Sports don't attempt to solve tactical problems or mindset issues that also can be fatal in the real world. However, when a fight reaches the stages where preemption and tactical decision-making have failed, the quick, violent application of effective techniques is necessary. And this is, I thought, the best part of the entire article right here. The greatest boon that competitive sports can bestow upon the combat community is the application of simple, proven techniques in a resisted or unscripted environment. Now, let me repeat that because I think that's so important. You know, he says that the greatest advantage that competitive shooting sports can offer somebody is the application of simple, proven techniques in a resisted or unscripted environment. Now, the unscripted part I might disagree with a little bit because the stages are scripted. I mean, you know, you know in advance what you're going to have to shoot. And, you know, that's actually one of the problems that I have with competitive shooting. I'm going to go ahead and put that out there right now. You know, you get to think about how you want to shoot the stage. You know, you get to think it out in your mind in advance. You're presented with the challenges and the bad guys up front. Okay, is that real life? No, that's not real life. That's not going to happen. They're probably not going to announce their intentions. You're not going to know where they're going to be. You're not going to get to plan it out. It's going to happen suddenly. It's going to happen quickly. It's going to catch you by surprise. And they, your attacker, is going to have the element of surprise. But I see what the author, HB, is saying here, is that the repetition of drilling the gun handling skills into your mind over and over and over and over again, that's one of the greatest benefits of the competitive sports. And because marksmanship is a necessary skill for anyone that's interested in self-defense, and marksmanship's difficult to master, constant repetition and practice is definitely required. Now, there's a lot of multi-gun competitions out there. You know, three-gun competitions through IDPA, and I think USPSA has them too. Now, multi-gun competitions are pretty cool, and one of the things that the author HB says in this article about multi-gun competitions. In other words, three-gun, for those of you who are not real familiar with it, three-gun, you show up with a handgun, a shotgun, and a rifle, and you use all of them in the match. You use your handgun, your shotgun, and your rifle. I've participated in a couple of three-gun matches. The very first one I took was, I took my Glock 34, I took my 12-gauge Remington 870, and at that time I had an AK I had just purchased, so I took my AK. Because I wanted to practice with it. Still have that AK, but I was kind of new with it. So I figured, hey, going to one of these three gun matches. And let me tell you, folks, it was quite an experience. It was a lot of fun. So the author says that the multi-gun competitions are kind of unique because they force a shooter to solve problems in an environment that's created by another person. And the quick thinking and the shooting lends itself to many tactical applications. Because combat itself is sometimes characterized by individuals being forced to make a number of decisions under stress. And you see, I think that's the important thing there, is they help you shoot under stress. They help you learn to make decisions. There was a stage today in the match that I shot where you could choose to not engage some of the targets. You had to be moving throughout the whole stage. All right, there was like 11 or 12 targets, and there were some that had a lot of hostages, good guys, that were attached to the target. And you had to make a decision in a split second while you're on the move, well, do I shoot this target with the hostage or do I not? Because if you shoot it and you hit the hostage, you get a 10-second penalty. If you don't shoot it, the rules of that stage were you only get a 2-second penalty. Your goal is to move out of the way. So the simulation there is to make yourself a moving target. You have multiple threats. You make yourself a moving target to multiple threats. I firmly believe, folks, that, you know, it's so much harder to hit a moving target. If some of you are new to handguns and you don't believe me on that, just go try it. Stand there and plink away at a stationary target and then start moving around. Move your body and try to shoot the same target. Move around. Take steps left. Take steps right. And then go to a match and shoot at a target that moves. That either moves away from you or moves left or moves right or pops up. They're a whole lot harder. So if you make yourself a moving target, the whole goal of this stage here was to get away from the bad guys that might have a hostage. And instead of shooting the hostage and injuring an innocent person, you only got a 2-second penalty if you did not engage one of those targets. So you had to make a decision. One of the targets I shot at. One of the guys with a hostage I shot at. And I hit the bad guy in the head. It was a calculated decision that I made. I was on the move, but I felt I had a good angle. And I felt I was close enough, and I had the front sight where I wanted it to be, and I just concentrated on a good trigger press, and bang. It was a nice headshot. Was it a risky move? Yeah, it was a risky move. I was facing a 10-second penalty. And, of course, it's even more risky in real life because you might shoot the hostage. Now, some might say, Bob, that was a dumb move. You know, just get off the X, get out of the way, get out of the situation, and you're better off. Well, here's what I want to say, folks. If that hostage is a family member of mine, whew, to just get out of the way and run, I don't think so. I mean, I hate to think about it. I really do. Man, I hate to think about that. But I'm glad I shot this match and I was in that scenario. Boy, I hate to think about that. I mean, if someone's got my wife or my son hostage, and I have a gun in my hand and I'm loaded and I'm ready to take care of the situation, and I don't act, I just run, get out of the way. I don't think I could do that. So I think it's good to practice those types of things. And that's one of the things that competitive shooting gives you the ability to practice, is things like that. Now, the author also makes a really good point. He says, especially at close quarters combat distances, CQB, the speed that you engage a threat, the speed can be the difference between life and death. You know, I've heard it said so many times on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum and a lot of other forums by a lot of, you know, very competent shooters. And so many people say, hey, look, the bottom line here in defending yourself, the name of the game in defending yourself is shoot the other guy before he can shoot you. Stop the threat. Speed. Speed out of the holster and on target. I mean, that's going to win a fight, right? Speed and accuracy. Getting the gun out of the holster, getting it into action, and getting on target before they do the same to you, assuming that they're armed with a gun. And so gaming it, going to sports, shooting sports, it helps you with those techniques. Now, I'm going to link to this article because you got to read it. But he says another point in there that I thought was pretty good. He says, my opinion is that the skills gained in a multi-gun match have a close transfer to combative shooting techniques, and that most people who have some cognitive abilities will be able to utilize the benefits of what they've gained in competition and apply those benefits against an enemy in close quarters combat. Now, Near the end of the article, I want to share, I want to skip ahead, and again, I want you to go ahead and read the whole article. I'll put a link to it in the show notes at handgunworld.com under the podcast posting for here for episode number 100. But I love the way he finishes this article. He says, it's of little use to go to a match and shoot a customized STI pistol in competition if what you carry on the street is a Glock or an XD. If you're law enforcement and you're issued a Glock, are you practicing with it? Or if you're issued an M&P, because I know a lot of law enforcement are switching to the M&Ps as well. If you're a private citizen like me, you carry an XD, I carry Glocks, maybe you carry an XD, you know, but you're out there with a finely tuned STI or a finely tuned gun, and I'm not knocking people that have finely tuned STIs. I mean, that's what Steve Zofi shoots, and I respect him a lot. But he also spent a year shooting his Glock 19, which is his carry gun. Now, the author says, also, do not worry about being a champion in the beginning. And this is so true. Just get out there and enjoy what you're doing. Just let the scores fall where they may. Competition will inflate your ego. But the best thing is, don't bring an ego to them. Okay, and don't get discouraged and don't get overwhelmed by the situation. Remember that 70%, that a 70% effective fight game is better than a 10%. But you got a lot of good, you know, fancy moves in there. In other words, if you're 70% effective and you're slowing down and you're accurate, 70% accuracy is a lot better than 10% accuracy and a whole bunch of speed and making it look good. Slow down and win. And so that's the end of that article. So, you know, let me just say this in closing here. I'm going to close out the last few minutes here of episode 100 by throwing some of my own thoughts into all of this stuff here that I've covered. As you know, I like to mix my training. I like to take both combative training courses and I like to shoot competitive sports. Shooting sports, because I think there's a benefit in both. As a matter of fact, I'm already planning on what classes. I'm going to take two classes in 2011, and I got it narrowed down. There's four that I'm looking at. There's a couple of Suarez International courses. A couple of Suarez International courses, and there's a tactical response class that I'm very seriously thinking about, and possibly a MAG class at Masada Youb Group. So I'm kind of strongly considering that as well. So I'm putting together my training budget here for 2011 in my training plan. And I'm going to mix it. And, you know, today, for example, in that personal protection match, you know, I was using some of the techniques that I learned in the Suarez International close-range gunfighting. You know, the quick scan. After you get done shooting, take a quick scan before you unload your gun and put it back in your holster. I didn't break any rules. I didn't break the 180 rule. But I was able to go ahead and scan all the targets to make sure that they're all down, to make sure that there's not any more threats before putting the gun away, holster reluctantly. You know, that's one of the things that I learned. You know, I couldn't do the full 360 assessment. I would have got myself thrown out and probably asked not to come back at all if I'd have done that. And that's one of the disadvantages, is that you can't do your 360, you can't check your 360, you can't check the Sewell position and so forth at a match. But you can do a scan and you can do it safely. And I would suggest that you practice that. Burn that into your memory. All right, burn that into as a technique that you always do. So there are ways to go there and combine what you learn in combative training classes and employ them, as long as you're doing it in a safe manner, in competition. So let me encourage all of you to participate. But more importantly, let me encourage you to train. That's the key. Train. I heard it said on another podcast. I forgot which one I was listening to. But somebody was talking about buying a used gun. And there's a lot of good deals you can get out there on used guns. And he said one of the reasons you can get a good deal on used guns is because a lot of people buy a gun, shoot one or two boxes of ammo through it, and then never shoot it again. And for whatever reason, they sell it. Either they don't like it, or they need the money, or, you know, they go somewhere where they're not, you know, they don't live in a very gun-friendly area anymore, and they have to sell it off, or whatever. And the fact of the matter is, they bought the thing brand new, they only shot one or two boxes of ammo through it, and now you get to be the owner of that nice gun. And you know what? That's so true. I think it's unfortunate. I really do. I think it's unfortunate that people don't shoot their guns enough. Now, it's fortunate for you, the buyer, you just got a good deal on a practically new gun that's only had a couple boxes of ammo shot through it, and you probably got it for 20 or 30% less or even a better discount than that versus what you would have paid for it new. So I guess one man's loss is another man's gain, but folks, please, don't you be the one that if you have to sell a gun, don't be the one that's only shot a box or two of ammo through it, okay? I mean, I hate to sell guns. I mean, you know, I've sold too many guns in my life, folks. I really have. And I regret all guns that I've sold. I wish I had back every gun that I've ever sold. And I'm not going to go into all the reasons why I had to make those decisions and stuff. Right now, I'm pretty satisfied with the arsenal that I have. I may add a 45 in 2011. Not quite sure about that yet. Either a 45 or a 357 SIG. But I can tell you something. The people who bought my guns, they bought guns that were in good shape. They bought guns that were well cared for. I take care of my guns just like I take care of my automobiles and the things that I need to depend on. But they certainly did not buy a gun that the previous owner has only shot one or two boxes of ammo through. Not me. Not from me. More like they bought a gun that I gave a 1,000-round trigger job to. That's what they bought. So, folks, give every gun you have a 1,000-round trigger job. Please? Please? Don't let's... You know, I mean, if you have to get rid of a gun for some reason, hopefully you don't. But if you do, I hope that you have put a significant amount of rounds through it for several reasons. Number one, I think you'll find that the more you shoot a firearm, the less likely you are to get rid of it because you'll get used to it, you'll know how it shoots, you'll know what it does, you'll get better with it, you'll get more proficient with it, and you'll like it. I think the biggest reason why people don't like a gun is because they haven't shot it enough. I'll say that again. I think the biggest reason why people don't like a gun is because they haven't shot it enough. Just personal opinion. Feel free to disagree if you want. And that's what the comment section's for, either on the forum or here at the main page at handgunworld.com. With that, folks, let me just go ahead and extend another big thank you to all of you for making this show what it is. I said that this show here, episode number 100, was just going to be like any other episode. I wasn't going to do anything special. I wasn't going to give anything away special. And I tried to keep it that way. I think you can feel my excitement, my passion come out for what I do. Thank you for the compliments, folks. That means a lot to me. It really does. And so because of you, I think I'm going to keep on doing this for a while. I'll do it for as long as you listen. And if you quit listening, you know what, folks? I got to say this, and I've said this many times. If this were to be my last podcast, if episode 100 was my 100th and my last Handgun World show, I would feel satisfied. I would. I would feel satisfied because I know I've made a difference in some people's lives out there. That's what it's all about, folks. It's about making a difference in people's lives, isn't it? I know that I've helped some people with their firearms decisions. There's a chance I might have even helped somebody make a decision that may save their life someday. I got to tell you, that is a good feeling. For all of you out there who are firearms trainers, you know what I'm talking about. You train people, you firearms trainers, let me talk to you for a minute. You train people every day to save their lives. You should feel good about that. Some of you out there who are trainers, you may have an example of a student whose life was saved because of something that you taught them. It's a great feeling, isn't it? And that's one of the reasons why I do this. So if for some reason this was my last show, I would feel very good that I have served my fellow citizens in a positive and impactful way when it comes to their self-defense needs. I don't have all the answers, folks. And you know what? Going forward for the next 100 episodes, if I do that many, there's going to be times I may make mistakes. There might be times I may have to correct myself. There might be people that come on here and interview with me that may not be 100% correct on everything, but they have a lot of great things to say, and you may not agree with everything. I don't agree with everything that John Hathaway said, but you know what? The man said it well. He had good reasons for it. He backed it up, and I respect that. I respect that a lot. So I think that's a good stopping point. Folks, you keep listening, and I'll keep putting out the podcasts. The next show I'm going to do is going to be a Christmas special, a firearms Christmas special, and that'll be out sometime early next week. In the meantime, folks, It's been great talking to you. It's been great doing episode number 100. And just like any other episode of the Handgun World Show, don't forget about my Facebook page, my YouTube channel. Don't forget about connecting with me on Shooters Legion. Of course, the Gun Rights Radio Network forum. And there's still a chance to get your order in for my upcoming CD or digital download for only $15. Folks, thanks for tuning in. I'm Bob Main. You've just listened to episode number 100 of the Handgun World Show, and the reason I carry a gun is because the cops are just too heavy. No offense to police officers. Ha ha ha, that was a joke. Because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Take care.
In Ireland, in Lebanon, in Palestine, in Berkeley,